West.
And here we are again, me and you, Kate, taking on the world, right. One podcast at a time. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
How was your weekend?
Not too bad. I had a hen's
night, I hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was...
Did you behave yourself?
Pardon?
Did you behave yourself?
Oh, always.
Did the hen behave herself?
Yes.
Liar. I've seen the pictures. No, yeah. I haven't actually. So happy Monday. And what have we got on the Wild West this morning? Calls for relics taken in conquest to be returned. The Rosetta Stone, they want to give it back.
Yeah, so it's been in the UK Museum for 200 years, but this stone is 2,500 years old, or almost 2,500 years old. British and Egyptian academics are saying it's time to be returned to Egypt. And so the Rosetta Stone was basically the thing that made them be able to decipher the hieroglyphs, basically. Yep. So it's of massive importance to the world, but probably more to Egypt, where it came from.
Yeah, and the return of historical artifacts from Britain, who basically, you know, went around the world and stole everything and brought it back.
Yeah.
There's a great little comedy routine from a stand-up comedian in England where he says, you know, if you had done that, what would be the would you hide it somewhere? No, you put it in a museum, put a plaque on it to say where you got it from, who you stole it from, and why it's so important to the people you stole it from.
Yeah.
And then when the other country rocks up and say, can we have it back? So, no, we haven't finished with it yet. So, yeah,
it's us.
Yeah, incredible that to think that all happened under the auspices of conquering the world.
Yes.
But now they want this particular one back, and I'm sure many other artifacts too.
There are a few that want, you know, to be returned, and one of them happens to be the most expensive diamond in the world that comes from India, and that's called the Kohinoor.
Well,
and it is worth, $591 million.
Good luck getting that back. Blimey, yeah. Charlie, I'm surprised it hasn't been set in some sort of crown somewhere.
Oh, I think it has.
Oh, has it? Oh, right, okay. It's not in its raw form. Here we go.
Yeah.
Now, this is a bit of a weird one. Nazi salutes at a soccer game over the weekend.
I don't know if you heard about this. I only saw it in passing and I was like, what is going on? So a Football Australia final has been overshadowed basically by a section of Sydney United fans chanting songs with fascist links and doing the Nazi salute. And this all happened during a welcome to country. So this is the New South Wales side United, which became the first non-A-League men's side to reach the final. They lost to A-League men club MacArthur FC in front of a 16,000 strong crowd, the second biggest in the competition's history. A section of the fans from United, which is formerly known as Sydney Croatia, sang Zadom Spremni, basically means for homeland ready, a chant used by the far right movement in the 1930s and 40s.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You just scratch your head sometimes that we pride ourselves on Australia. Quite rightly, it prides itself on how far I think we've come in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of, you know, integration and thinking about how our actions impact on other cultures and religions and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then you get these morons spoiling what should be a memorable night for their soccer club.
Yeah.
By just acting like complete morons. And I'm sure Football Australia will be trawling through video footage. And I'm sure if they can identify these Neanderthals, they will never be able to go to another football match again in their lives. So, if they do, then they shouldn't, because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It is. It's disgusting. And, I was kind of torn on whether to actually talk about it, because we probably shouldn't even give these people airspace. But, you know, it's just disgusting.
Well, it is reflective of a small, very tiny minority of people that they think that'll just, I don't know, advanced some sort of agenda.
Yeah, I suppose by talking about it, the only thing we can do is try and find out who did it and then make sure
I'm sure the football authorities will not want that at any of their grounds, at any level, in any state in this country.
Yes.
Or they shouldn't anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why Harry snubbed William might have been revealed. Now, which snub are we talking about here? Are we talking snub at the funeral, or were we talking previously, or what's the go-go?
I think this might be the initial snub, like the OG snub.
Right, okay.
So it's kind of... And it came out in a documentary, which is now coming out in a book, which is a bit confusing. But so someone called Valentine Lowe has written a book. Mm-hmm. Which
and that's the book that all these sort of extracts about Megan and everything, which is, from memory, it's a behind-the-scenes look at all the courtiers that work in the palace and have been so close to this family for so long. They've opened up, anonymously, but they've opened up about what really goes on behind the four walls of various palaces across the UK.
Yeah, and it seems like the snub may have come from an ITV documentary, in that it was filmed in a garden in Johannesburg, and Harry and Meghan basically just kind of said what they were thinking, which is their truth, and everyone was expecting maybe Harry would say, when asked about his relationship with William, you know, how is it? Mm. And, you know, you'd expect him to keep to the party lines as what the firm usually does, and stay quiet. But apparently, well, he did say that, you know, they're brothers, and there's ups and downs, and there's a down right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I remember that comment, and I remember all the fallout that came from it, because there'd been speculation about the two brothers feuding across London and then across the pond.
Yep.
It's fascinating. This book, or the access to this book, or the access this book has got, is fascinating to me, because you always worry about what these royal sources are whether it's just some sort of, you know, down on the left journalist making something up, which we never do, obviously.
No,
so here at the
not
West
us,
at least.
No.
But yeah, this seems to be firsthand. This strikes me as something different, this book, as in sort of firsthand accounts of really up close and personal as well, of what was going on.
Yeah, and it all centres around 2019 tour of South Africa. And I don't know if you remember, I think I'm like reading it now, I do remember the journalist asked Meghan basically how she was going, and she said thank you for asking.
Because
not many
no one
people
else asked. Yeah, I'm sure.
But also this documentary, as you mentioned, the book said it came from the courtiers, and maybe that's the first instance where we may hear how much maybe of a diva, and maybe how difficult Meghan is. So
well, that's certainly the reports from some of the extracts that I read, that that some of her behaviour has been well, less than the palace was expecting, that's for sure. So, yeah, I'm sure there will be many more tales of the uninvited out of the royal family as we, as they and we get used to this new regime headed by Charles. And there's a lot of jockeying for position underneath. So, yes. Well, thanks for joining us, Kate, as always. I look forward to spending the week with you as well.
You too.
To have your say, or if you have a story, email the team at thewestlive@wanews.com.au.